This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday Serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, Edie's upset became evident, and Ruby, still in shock, struggled to cope with Vi's interference.
Another knock on the back door broke the silence.
"Shall I tell Mrs. Vi to go away if it's her again?" asked Edie.
"Better not."
"It's Madam," Edie called. "Hello."
"Oh, Lord, the phone." Ruby ran to replace the receiver. Her employer entered the dining room, put her basket on the table and pulled off her gloves.
"Now, something has happened. Why are you not at work?"
Edie looked from Ruby to Madam and to the basket.
"Edith, these are for you."
Madam handed her a small box of chocolates.
"Go to your room now. Mama and I will talk by the fire."
"I'm sorry we haven't got any real coffee," Ruby said as Edie left.
"Tea?"
Madam shook her fingers.
"No tea. Speak to me."
3 dry words fell from Ruby's mouth. "Frank has died."
"Ah."
Madam lifted her head.
"So that is it.
And we?"
"We will do what we have to do."
From her basket, she produced a bottle, 3/4 full of colourless liquid.
"I have brought a special little elixir.
Glasses." Ruby got 2 short glasses from the cabinet.
"I'm sorry I didn't turn up to work," she gasped. "Everything's gone topsy-turvy."
"The world writes itself," said Madam. "You will be at work tomorrow. Let us sit by the fire."
Madam drew the 2 armchairs closer to the fire, sat herself in Frank's place, and ordered Ruby to sit opposite. Ruby watched her fill the glasses with the elixir and accepted one.
"This is Raksha," said Madam,
lifting her glass.
"It is an old remedy in the mountains of my homeland. Raksha makes everything better."
"Madam," Ruby's voice was hoarse, "Frank's gone, and Douglas can't bear to stay."
"Such things," Madam uttered with sadness. "Sip." Words were pointless. Dead, rotting leaves in a gutter that ought to be cleared out. In that moment of silence, as Ruby held the glass of whatever it was, she saw everything in her history that had led to Frank grasping at Douglas as his last breath left him. None of it could be spoken. She wasn't sure it made any sense. If someone had told her the whole story, she wouldn't have believed it. Ruby put her mouth to the edge of the glass and ran the tip of her tongue over her lips. It was pleasant tasting.
"Drink,"
Madam commanded. The raksha blasted through the roof of her mouth and into the bones of her skull. Her throat scorched, but her chest lit up. She blew a breath, expecting flames. Madam laughed.
"Again.
Let the elixir do its work.
Whether Ruby was willing or not, the warmth melted the chains around her heart.
My dear, it is time you called me by my birth name, Shiponya. In another world, you could be my little sister. Shiponya.
It seemed a long time since she'd had a sense of well-being. She wasn't sure it was right for her to feel as good as she did. Shiponya smiled, a beautiful smile.
We have much in common, I think. Sip, let yourself be at ease. There will be things to attend to later. Later.
The room was warm, and the fire was banked with coal when she opened her eyes. Edie sat on the floor at her feet, making Percy chase a piece of ribbon.
Madam went, she said. Janice is going to pick us up tomorrow morning, because Madam said it's going to rain, and you mustn't be late. And I saved 2 chocolates for you.
Ruby hardly heard her daughter. How much had she told her employer? She only hoped that stuff called Raksha did not have the properties of a truth drug. Janice had read about Frank's death in the morning paper, and she was full of condolences and questions.
Bloody Vi, said Ruby.
I suppose she thought she'd better put a notice in to let everyone know.
I suppose, said Ruby.
There are a few more in this morning's paper, said Janice.
Can we not talk about it?
Did you know he was just about famous before the war? Him and Douglas?
Janice.
His mother was an actress.
Janice, please.
Ruby tried not to snap. I mean it. I don't want to talk about it. Haven't you got a hat to block or something? Oh, right, said Janice.
Blast.
Ruby had threaded her needle with the wrong shade for the trim in front of her. Beryl's been flirting with the butcher, said Janice. He's married too. He gave her a whole pound of sausages for free the other day.
I have missed you.
Ruby felt herself smile. I didn't mean to go on about it, said Janice. And I am sorry. I'm just not sure what to do.
It must be awful.
How's Edie?
I don't know.
Ruby couldn't describe how Edie was. Upset? Shocked? Mourning? Delving into it was pointless. They just had to get past it and carry on, didn't they? What else was there? That morning, getting Edie ready and on the walk to school, neither of them mentioned Douglas. Wednesday evening was clear, the sky touched with pink, promising a stiff morning frost. Walking along with paper parcel of fresh flounder tucked under her arm and a cardboard hat box held by string, Ruby crammed her mind with thoughts about what she'd wear to the funeral. Perhaps she'd look in the jewellery box Frank had given her and pick out a pair of Mrs. Pierce's earrings. He'd want her to, wouldn't he? And the late Mrs. Pierce would want her to look her best. The warm green coat was out of the question for a funeral. If she went through the fabric hoard again, she might find a dark length of material suitable to wrap around her shoulders. All she could do was make her new hat stylish enough to please Frank, if he'd be looking down at her. She'd like to impress Madame Shiponya Hoja, who had accepted 12 shillings for an untrimmed black felt with a narrow brim, which seemed a bit steep, a bit of wire, hat elastic that almost matched her hair, and another shilling for a length of wide black ribbon. Ruby watched Edie skip ahead to chat with a girl swinging on a gate. The heavy cost of her daughter's freedom hit her chest, as though someone had thrown a rock at her. For now, for the first time since they'd arrived in Palmerston North, Edie would be free to leave Ruby's side and run about like other people's children.
"Did you remember to order meat for Percy?"
asked Edie as they opened the door. "Hell, the butcher!" Ruby looked at her watch. There might just be time to phone and ask Mr. Clark to add a scrap of liver to their order for delivery tomorrow. Without Frank to take the order in as soon as the boy delivered it, what was she going to do, having to go to work each day? At Rat's Nest, there'd been a little wire mesh cupboard on the veranda, so stray dogs didn't get to it, and the fresh air kept it cool. One thing was certain, she'd be damned before she'd ask Vi for help.
"Mrs. Woods,"
said the butcher's wife through the phone line.
"Are you able to settle the account?"
"The fortnight isn't quite up, Mrs. Clark," said Ruby. "Is something wrong?"
"It's not that," the woman said. "But the account was carried over from Mrs. Pierce to Mr. Pierce. But with the situation changed..."
"I see," said Ruby.
"It's 18 shillings and 4 pence halfpenny.
"I'll pay it when I come in tomorrow," Ruby said.
"If Mr. Woods would like to come in, we can always open another account for you."
"But I'm the one who manages the household." The woman drew an audible breath.
"It might be best," said the brusque voice, "if you come in and pay cash for your victuals for the time being. You can still have your parcel delivered as long as it's paid for first."
"Very well, Mrs. Clark. I understand." She tried not to slam the phone receiver down. It was clear, all right. Gossips, probably Vi, had undoubtedly told the butcher she'd be moving on. She'd become unreliable, like some transient stray. They could go to hell. There was another butcher, and nearer, too. She'd go there, see what his cuts were like. But Clark's sausages were exceptionally good, and their mince wasn't too fatty. "Damn, damn, damn!"
"What's being damned now?"
said Edie. "I hope Percy doesn't mind a flounderhead for his tea." Shivering at the graveside, Ruby felt Shiponya Hoja slip her arm around her waist. They stood at the outer perimeter of mourners, behind the black marble headstone of Rosalind Pierce. Most of the words recited by the vicar were muffled by the wall of people, or lost in the wind.
"Ashes to ashes."
Frank was never a man made of ash. He was scory of rock, forged in a volcano, made into gravel. No, he was a gemstone, as beautiful and brilliant as he was hard. He was... Soil thudded on the wooden coffin lid. She'd been determined not to cry, not out in the open where people would see her. Her nose began to run, and she sniffed into her hanky. When she raised her eyes, she saw Douglas looking at her. The open grave was a chasm between them. When he caught her glance, he turned his back and disappeared among the other mourners. The dam broke. Breathless, she walked away before she made an exhibition of herself. Her tears dripped off the edge of her jaw. She didn't attempt to mop them. Tears over being unable to help Douglas, for his avoiding her, for her unfathomable love for Frank, and for the hurt boys that they were. The German shrapnel that had ruined Frank's life, for the dreams they'd lost. And she wept for herself. There were angry tears, too, for the promise Douglas had made to Edie, and broken. The thud of that soil on the coffin reverberated in her ears. Hollowed out, she slumped in the passenger seat as Shiponya drove back to All Saints Hall for the repast. The proper send-off, as someone said. Ruby numbly obeyed when Shiponya commanded her take out her compact and dust her face and touch up her lipstick. Then she allowed herself to be steered across the road, up the path to the wooden hall behind the brick church, without the strength to resist. As they neared the steps, she stopped.
"You will go in," said Shiponya. "It is right for you to stand with these people."
Ruby shook her head.
"I should get back."
"If we are late, Edith will be happy with Janice."
Shiponya took both Ruby's hands in hers.
"My dear, it is wise to remember. All the things people do and say at these times, it is just theatre."
Frank would approve of that. He'd cock his head and twist his mouth in a grin. What a pity he and Shiponya didn't get the time to know one another better.
"It's all wrong," Ruby mewled.
Shiponya's hands clutched Ruby's hands like an eagle's talons as she continued, leaning forward to whisper.
"We have had Acts 1 and 2. Now, Ida Shure Ime, we enter Act 3. Cups of tea, nasty sausage rolls, and little sandwiches. And their stories. Stories. Theatre. All of it. And you? You are one of the principal players. They just do not know it."
Her shoulder lifted.
"Madam,
for you, I am Shiponya. Now, in we go."
Taking a rising step, she kissed Ruby's forehead. Taking a deep breath, Ruby plunged herself into the throng. Shiponya slipped between people, in and out of groups, like a glittering goldfish in a tank full of guppies. Men and women took notice of her. Ruby watched her respond with what appeared to be gracious, unaffected smiles, spending a few minutes talking to one and then another, as though she believed she belonged. How did she do it? The role of spectator lifted Ruby out of herself, and she assessed the hats the women were wearing. Aside from Shiponya's and her own, there was only one decent hat in the place, and that looked like a Vardo, on a tall, made-up woman in very high heels, peering superciliously along her nose at everyone through her cigarette smoke. Ruby tuned into the voices around her. A group of men, some of whom had military ribbons and medals pinned to their suits, talked nearby.
"Good send-off. Fine man. Sterling. Ticker, apparently. Aye, that's what I heard. Crook for a while. Always thought he was indestructible." "Yeah, well, you never know, do you? Jerry's scrap metal did for him after all, eh?"
The last speaker, an older man, paused and glanced sideways at the ankles of a young woman swishing past him, on her way to where Ruby stood.
"Hello there."
Cherry Lips smiled.
"Oh," said Ruby. "I do. The typists. That's right."
Ruby made an attempt at congeniality, even though her ears were with the men's voices nearby.
"He was remarkable. Core, you should have seen him when he got a gong for it, didn't he?"
"Call me Phil," said Cherry Lips. "It's short for Phyllis, but don't ever call me that. Don't you think Phyllis sounds like a disease?"
Her voice faded into the background as the men on the other side of her talked.
Where's that cobber of his he used to knock around with? I'd have thought he'd be here. Woodsy. That's it, Douglas Woods. I heard he was... Nah, I heard he packed it all in.
How do you do? I'm Ruby, she decided to say to Phil. It was a relief to have someone friendly next to her.
Ladies are slopping tea into cups over there at the long table. I'll get you one if you like.
No thanks.
Don't blame you. They should serve sherry at these things. Really, they should. Toast the departed and all that.
Ruby forced a smile. Yes, they should. She meant it. Shiponya was kissing the cheeks of a willowy man wearing a black jersey under a tweed jacket.
Who's that? Do you know? Ruby asked. That's Madame Vardo from...
No, I mean the man with her.
Some bigwig from the Wellington theatre scene, said Phil. Foreign. Toured with Pavlova. I've seen his picture in the paper. Mummy would know.
Another group of men formed within earshot. Hands were shaken. Cigarettes were offered and lit.
How are you, Jack? Better in some, I reckon.
The acridity of cheap cigarette smoke made Ruby think of the Du Mauriers she'd left in Douglas's case, and she wished she had one.
Frank's still making an impression, said a man with a handlebar moustache. Do you remember that time, Frank, and... What was that fellow's name?
Ruby didn't hear what they said next. Phil's voice was easy on the ear.
Quite a bunch of theatre people have turned up. That one, wearing the cape? That's... what's his name? You know, he directs nearly everything.
A new male voice joined the other men.
Where's Woodsy? Isn't he here? Always thought we'd see his name in lights. Someone said he's been seen around town.
Phil's narration broke through.
And the woman with the blonde hair? And the purple hat with the little veil? I can never remember names. I heard she's off to London.
Oh? Ruby felt as though she was standing on a slowly melting block of ice. Phil and her grating chatter was a temporary shaft of warmth, but she couldn't stop her ears picking up the men's talk.
Heard he's a brush salesman. Go on. Good Lord.
Their words gouged at her. Douglas. Phil was cooing.
Oh, look! There's Miss Rawlins, the music teacher!
The men had drawn themselves into a tight cluster.
Thought it'd have been here. After everything, I'm sure I saw Woodsy hovering around earlier.
She followed the men's gaze as they scanned the room. If Douglas had been in the background, avoiding her, he was gone now.
I have to say, I simply adore your hat,
Phil gushed, drawing the attention of a huddle of middle-aged tea-drinking ladies. Thanks, said Ruby, with a twinge of guilt at using the kid to shield herself. It was cowardly of her. She eyed the ladies looking her way.
I don't know who she is, said one.
Didn't she come with that foreign Vardo woman?
It was your hat that I noticed first, said Phil. Then I saw it was you.
The men had dropped their voices, sharpening Ruby's attention.
Remember that time, Frank and Woodsy?
There were inaudible words, followed by a crescendo of coarse laughter. Her hand went to her throat. It wasn't her place to defend Frank or Douglas. Not here, not now.
I'd love one like it, but I hardly wear hats at all.
Phil's face was open friendliness.
Where did you get it?
This is one I designed, Ruby said, touching her hat lightly. The three ladies stared at her. I design at Salon Vardo. Whatever possessed her to tell such an extravagant lie? Across the room, Shiponya caught her eye and smiled enigmatically.
Oh! Gasped Phil. You are clever! Aren't you glad you didn't get a typing job?
Yes, I am, rather. Ruby wanted to walk away, find a corner where no one would notice her. Phil might follow her. There was no escape. The low talk of the men burned into her, but she was compelled to hear it.
Someone told me he got married. Not Frank. No, Woodsy. You're kidding,
a man spluttered, choking on his tea. They were sniggering. This time, her neck prickled hotly. Shiponya was no longer in sight. Then, her fine ankles, in black 15 denier, showed briefly between the trousered legs at the end of the room.
Sorry, I'm being rude, taking you over, said Phil. You probably want to talk to someone else.
No, it's all right, Ruby said. I might get that cup of tea after all.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.